Oh,
559.
Pam always runs out of time.
I started, so, I mean, not that, just so we can start whenever you're ready. I'm just saying, recording's going.
All right. Well, it is 6 o'clock, July 12th, and we will call our meeting to order. For attendance, Supervisors Beshaw, Franco, Gashke, and Kubicki are here. Chair Carroll is traveling in excused absence tonight. We also have Youth and Governance Parish here with us tonight.
Olivia, yes.
Okay, so we got our attendance out of the way. I do want to make sure before we jump in here that we're in compliance with open meetings laws. Have we been properly noticed and are we in compliance, Pam?
Yes, we are.
Okay, great. Thank you. Also by way of introduction, want to make sure that we have enough time for all of our educators to be able to present and hear all the updates of things that are going on. So we'll try to plan on about 20 minutes or so for our featured presentation and about 20 minutes or so for our other educator updates and director updates, and then that'll give us about 10 minutes or so before our next meeting starts. So we'll try to keep to that schedule if possible. There's some flexibility in there. Before we jump into business, I would like to go around and introduce ourselves. So Olivia, I know you've been here with us before, but I don't think we really got a chance to officially learn a little bit about you and for you to hear from us. And we also have a new UW educator that we're excited to meet. And so why don't we just go around the table, introduce ourselves. If you want to say, you know, who you are, what your position is, Olivia, you know, maybe where you go to school or what you might be interested in doing in the future, perhaps, anything that you want to share with us. So I can start since I'm putting everybody on the spot here. So I'm Daniel Gashke, Vice Chair of PDEC, and I represent the 7th District, which is the very heart of the city of Kenosha, so Columbus Park, Brass neighborhood, including the old Chrysler site that's being redeveloped right now. So, been on the board since 2018, and that's about me.
Ed Kubicki, I've been county board supervisor now for 18 years. Been on various committees, finance, human services, PDEC, obviously, here. I represent District 6. It's the near north side of Kenosha, the city proper. 22nd Avenue, if you will, to Washington Road, north to about 18th Street, and east to the Carthage College area, and back north around to 14th Avenue and Washington Road. Enjoy what I'm doing, and I'm happy to be here. Happy to welcome all of these new members and new youth of governance. Good luck.
John Franco. I serve District 13. I've been on the board for, since 2016. I serve on the Judiciary and Law Committee and Finance Committee, as well as this one. I guess that's about it. Short and sweet. Go ahead.
I'm Olivia Parrish. I'm under District 11, Zach Stock. I go to Harborside. I don't know what I want to do in the future yet. I'm still trying to figure that out.
Good. You got time.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Don't worry about it. That's fine.
I don't know what I want to do in the future. I'm Brian Bashaw, Supervisor of District 19, so you're in the middle of my neighborhood now. We're big parade last weekend. I don't know if you made it for the parade here in Bristol Progress Days Parade. Did you all make the parade?
I was up north.
I'm sorry.
My week of vacation last weekend.
It's called the Candy Parade, so a lot of candy on the roads for the kids. I just left Ed's neighborhood a moment ago. We finally secured a church for my daughter's wife.
Ooh,
good day.
Congrats.
So, but welcome aboard.
I'm Pam Larson. I'm the Area Extension Director. Not only did I see you last month, but I also saw you on the bus tour, so it was great to see you again. And I provide support and guidance for all the educators.
Hi, everybody. I'm Savannah Myers. I'm the new Community Development Educator. I just graduated, my goodness, from UW-Madison with my master's this May. So I've gotten experience kind of programming with being a household over in Madison and also through some of my master's programs and different courses and stuff. So I'm really excited to see where this journey takes me.
Master's in?
I got my master's in public health, but I did a lot of community engagement and things like that as well throughout that. So I'm really focused on that through my master's. So I'm really excited to see where this development and econ portion takes me. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Mary Matten, health and well-being educator in the Kenosha County office.
I'm Carolyn Van Sloten. I'm the 4-H educator. I know you know Erica, Olivia, so I used to share an office with her before she left.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Vijay Pandian. I'm a horticulture extension educator. I serve Kenosha, Racine, and 10% of my time in Milwaukee County as well, too.
Great. All right, well then, why don't we jump right in then, Vijay, to your featured program tonight. Vijay had told me that he had initially planned to have the presentation outside and we get to enjoy some of his berries and things that are growing. I don't think the weather really is great for that, so I think we'll unfortunately stay inside tonight. But Vijay,
did you pick any berries?
I was hoping, actually, you know, because I did all the setup actually for outdoor presentation, including live blueberries, gooseberries, everything is like ready for harvest, so you guys could have a taste of it. So, but anyway,
you could have picked it and put it on the table.
You know, that considered too much work on my day. As part of my task, you know, I want to encourage you guys to go and pick yourself, you know, so.
Take one for the team.
But anyway, so this is my topic of my presentation. I'm spinning it around the concept of antioxidants. I'm not a medical expert by means, but, you know, I'm going to present you some research-based information that I collected and why the significance of antioxidants in a is, and what can be done actually, you know, what are some of the crops that are really rich in those antioxidant ones, and what I'm doing in the study trial, trying to figure out, you know, which fruits are really easy and, you know, able to harvest them, manage them, and are more tasty. With that in mind, 3 years ago, we developed a proposal of conducting the small fruit trial, and was in the preliminary in the planning stage back in 2019-2021. And once the proposal got approved by the Kenosha County in 2021, we developed these giant boxes. These are raised bed boxes, about like 8 feet by 8 feet in multiple tier shape. And it took one summer intense to develop this giant boxes. One, why these boxes? Why can't we put it in the ground? So there is a lot of reasons to it. As you know, in this part of the region, the soil is a heavy soil. If you attempt to dig up in about like a 10, 12 inches deep, probably you need to find a back specialist, especially if you're a senior citizen. You know, this soil is a heavy soil. At the same time, many gardeners are sick and tired of trying to weed, trying to manage them, or trying to contain these plants. And many of these small fruits are in the bramble species, which are like raspberries, blackberries, and stuff. They tend to creep out. So it's hard to manage those things. At the same time, talk about watering and all those things comes about. You know, being in a heavy soil, when it rains, it becomes like a soggy wet, which becomes a root rot issue. So many gardeners face these multiple tasks, and sometimes they're fed up in growing all these berry fruits, okay, because of those challenges. So we attempted, actually, why can't we try to grow them in a raised bed? Because a lot of, there are not much science has been done, actually, because there is a preconception notion that if you try to grow them in a raised bed about 10, 12 inches high, they may get freezed out. Because we have a very severe winter, the temperature drops down to 18 degrees Fahrenheit or less than that, or even to minus 15 degrees. What's going to happen to the root system? It's going to kill those plants. No one hasn't attempted to do those things, especially when it comes to blueberries too. So this is our first attempt trial to try to grow them in raised bed. So that's a basic concept here. So what my objective is, first of all, whether these crops are hardy for our region in raised bed situation, whether they can tolerate in a southeast part of Wisconsin winter temperatures. How can we be able to manage them successfully? Can it be contained in a raised bed situation? If it grows like 5 feet, 6 feet tall and spreads out crazily, can we be able to contain them? And at the same time, is there any specific pest and disease issue that we have to worry about and contain them as well too? And talk about pruning on top of. With all being said, if the fruit tastes like a crap, very bitter, stringent, but the homeowner is gonna like it, or is there any better alternative to those things? No matter what, you know, how rich the fruit is in antioxidant, if it doesn't really taste very well, many people are not attempting to grow those things. So how are you gonna increase the kids? And that brings up into a controversial issue about all those juices that they produce in the commercial industry world. But if you look into all those juices, they mix quite a bit with the high refined sugar. And that whole defeats the purpose of being an antioxidant-rich properties, you know. So that's the three main objectives that keeping in mind I tend to do this in a trial program. Speaking of that, if you guys are new to antioxidant, this is the first time you're hearing about this buzzword antioxidant, what it means is that these are some of the natural plant substances and that helps to quench the free radicals. So what it means is that any food that we intake, or if you're exposed to certain unnatural environments, like in being in a highly polluted environment, or if you tend to be like a chain smoker, in those type of circumstances, when your body ingests all those food materials, pollutants, smokes, and everything, it tends to oxidize. Anything goes inside, it tends to oxidize, releases energy. It not only releases energy, but also releases some free radicals. These free radical compounds, they are like electron grabbers. They tend to disturb all the healthy cells and tend to grab all the electrons from them. Once it tends to grab the electrons, these healthy cells become denutralized. They get destroyed. And that really leads to a lot of consequences. So a lot of studies have been done about the impact of this free radical causing the cells to be more, you know, cancerous, preventing some of the infections that's happening up in the body, causing all the cognitive disorders and all those things happens up. Now, these antioxidants, these are natural substances. Sometimes some of the body synthesizes itself. Sometimes majority of the things we intake as a food. So here's a concept comes as a food as a medicine. If you take the right type of food, it can act as a medicine to you. So some of these antioxidant-rich fruits and vegetables, when you ingest them, when you intake them, they tend to quench these radicals, free radicals. They tend to supply them back again with some enormous amount of electrons and tend to deneutralize them, neutralize them completely. So in other words, antioxidant is a misnomer. It is not really completely killing them as free radical. It tends to being like more of a generous electron donor and tend to quench its thirst. So that is a basic concept of this antioxidant, what it does that. Now, the antioxidants, it has been measured in many fruits and vegetables by certain type of methods. And how they measure is that in terms of how much oxygen radicals, these antioxidants can be absorbed. And so they come up with a terminology called ORAC. ORAC means oxygen radical absorption capacity. This is a term used by USDA. They tend to develop this ORAC value for many fruits and vegetables beginning in 1990s, okay? And it got popular, and not among homeowners, but among pharmaceutical world. So what these pharmaceutical companies, they tend to do is that they took advantage of all this USDA data. Hey, here are all the rich antioxidant fruits and vegetables, and these pharmaceutical companies start to synthesize their own antioxidant-rich chemicals and stuff and starting to advertise, hey, super tablets and all those kind of things. So it kind of defeated the whole notion. The reason is that the supplements, even though they are rich in antioxidant, they lack behind a lot of natural compounds that the plants produces. compounds like phenols, polyphenols, flavonoids, they tend to actually, these are synthesized naturally by the plants, they tend to provide more health benefits rather than just providing an antioxidant type. So many chemicals, pharmaceutical companies, they tend to synthesize just the antioxidant, not the other natural compounds. So it kind of defeated those kind of whole purpose to it too. So in 2004, the USDA took it off completely because it seems to be serving only for the pharmaceutical companies. So anyway, that's a behind the story and how this USDA came up with the ORAC thing. Now if you Google up, sometimes you will completely miss those things. It's no more anywhere. That is the reason behind it. So in 2021, we established this trial program. And so we have, initially we started with a lot of different types of varieties, especially like blueberries and stuff like that. But unfortunately, it ended up in disappointment. In 2021, we had this extreme drought, like once in a century in Kenosha. I planted about like 15 different varieties of blueberry, only one survived. So I lost quite a bit. And so it was a very bad start, and I wasn't sure what to do, and I was trying to contemplate, you know, whether to quit this or not, or what to do with this, because I don't want to spend most of my program dollars into this. But in 2022, we attempted again, actually. And so we have been testing all like about like 10 or 11 different types of crops and different types of varieties. So I gave you guys a handout with a list of all those varieties that we have planted. So I'm gonna pick and choose some of those varieties, some of the crops that might be rich in antioxidant properties. And the very first one is the lingonberry. It is so rich in antioxidant property, it is listed as a number two, which are about like a 20,300 of ORAC value to it. So, but we don't grow lingonberries commonly in Wisconsin. Lingonberries, in fact, is actually native in the region from Arctic, Subarctic, all the way goes to Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan. In Wisconsin, lingonberries is an endangered species. You'll find it typically in Lake Superior area, in the cliff areas of the Lake Superior. And most people don't commercialize lingonberries. In Europe, and like especially in Scandinavian regions, it's one of the most common type of crops, and people fan out in the wooded areas to harvest these naturally growing lingonberries in the forest floor. But lingonberries is very rich. It's in the kind of like a blueberry, cranberry type of related species. So we tried growing lingonberries in 2021, and I was really thrilled about it because it survived the winter and it stayed evergreen because it's the first time I'm learning about in lingonberry. It can be grown as a ground cover. It's just like a creeping Charlie. It tends to creep on the ground, it seems like. And only after a year later, it starts producing the flowers. So this spring, we got enormous flowers in a couple of different varieties like Balsad and Red Pearl. And they're starting to produce some tiny fruits, actually. So those fruits, what I read actually is that they look like a cranberry, miniature cranberries. And so you have to process it right away. You have to immediately, you know, put it in the freezer or you need to make it as a juice. It doesn't store that really well. So this is going to be the first year, probably hoping like in August or early September, it'll start to ripe. So if you guys are around, come over, taste some lingonberries over here. So I'm really looking forward to figure out more about those lingonberries, but certainly it can really, if we can able to grow in Wisconsin. One of the biggest caveat is that it needs acid soil. So the media that we have is primarily mixed with peat and pine bark. And every spring we add some sulfur to it, that's it. And so it didn't show any sign of in discolorations on the leaf due to lack of nutrients. So it certainly can be grown in our region as long as you can able to prepare an acid media. So cranberries, geez, you might be wondering, why are you growing cranberries? Actually, we thought cranberries grows in a bog areas in central part of Wisconsin. Here in southeast part of Wisconsin, we don't have that kind of conditions in backyard. So there are exceptions to it. There are a couple of varieties. One is called Ben Lear and Pilgrim. They don't require water. They don't require marshy areas or boggy areas to grow. As long as your media is acid media, which is mixed with peat and pine and a little bit of sulfur to it, you can able to grow these things. just like lingonberries, these cranberries, these two varieties, and you know, can be awesome, can survive in Wisconsin, especially in southeast part of Wisconsin, and it's also evergreen. It stays throughout green throughout the winter time. And in fact, last year it started even producing, the year, first year it started producing some fruits. So now they actually can start to see some fruits here as well too. So usually you start to see them ripening probably in September again. Last year when I tasted it, it is a little bit more toddy. And that's the first time I realized that the cranberries that you get in many of the gardens and you know, many of the grocery stores and stuff, they kind of sweeten them because we can't able to directly ingest the raw fruit because it's very toddy in taste to it. So be free to ask any question as I advance because I got only 20 minutes. So I'm just kind of skimming through. Blueberries. It's one of the most popular fruits among many gardeners and many residents. And the thing about it is that the consumption of the blueberries in North America has been tripled. So if you look at the statistic among, in the whole world, United States and Canada are the highest number of consumers for blueberries. Not even European countries. So about like 75 to 80% of the worldwide productions goes towards to meet the demands of US citizens and Canadians. That shows you how much the demand for blueberries is. And that's why many farmers are tend to commercializing blueberries because they can fetch a lot of premium price for it. But the disadvantage is that when you start commercializing quite a bit, you might have heard in the news many times, blueberry has joined the famous 13 dirty list of fruits and vegetables. What it means is that these are the fruits and vegetables are highly contaminated with pesticides. So blueberries probably joined the list because of the commercialization of that and the huge demand. So speaking of that, many homeowners tend to want to grow blueberries in their own backyard, but our soil condition doesn't meet for them because they need acid soil to grow those things. So here's the first time we are attempting to grow in a raised bed situation. And obviously, I'm really thrilled to say that yes, you can grow them in a raised bed situation. You can grow them in an acid media. You can prep your own acid media. And it's not expensive, it's very cheap too. So we attempted to grow all this about like 12 or 13 different, 14 different varieties in about four big boxes. And some of the varieties that I'm really pleased to say that if you guys have time, you can go ahead and harvest some of the fruits. Is a one is called Chandler Draper. They seem to be producing a little bit early this year. Probably started to produce a crop probably like mid-July, and we can start to see some ripening fruits over there. We've been covered with some bird nets over there because the birds are picking them quite a bit. So you know that is the main predators for us, I would say, in terms of blueberries. We didn't encounter any other pests and diseases.
Put a net on them.
Yep, we did. So when you see those things, we have some net covered on those things, you know. So these are the basic ingredients. The first two are the basic ingredients in preparing an acid media. You basically use pine bark and peat. Peat, you can get a bale of peat in any garden center or a box store for about 10 or 15 bucks. And pine bark, you can also get it as a mulch material in any garden center as well. You mix them 50-50. Sulfur, you can also get it at the garden sulfur, and you sprinkle it up in springtime. You will see a tremendous decrease in pH by adding sulfur, and you need to do the sulfur amendment every spring. And you'll drop your pH from 7.2 immediately to about 5.5 or even close to 5. So I did a soil test on this on the second year, and I was amazed and thrilled about the soil test report, how dramatically the soil pH got down because of adding sulfur. Now, these two ingredients doesn't provide nitrogen, phosphorus, or potassium, or any other major nutrients plants need. So we tend to use some high acid fertilizer just to supplement it. A lot of studies have shown you don't have to go to this extreme to get the high acid. If you can get able to get access to straight urea, you can also use that as well too. Unfortunately, I couldn't find straight urea in garden center, but I was able to get it at one of the commercial wholesale company in Waukesha, and they were able to sell me this. So, fig. I know everyone loves fig. You know, many Americans love fig. and how we can grow fig here. Okay, this isn't actually more of a discovery to me. I was originally attempting to grow Chicago hardy fig, which has been popularly advertised that it is hardy for our zone here in Wisconsin, southeast part of Wisconsin. I was thrilled to plant it in 2021, and it grown really amazingly well. It got about 4 or 5 feet tall, produced a fruit. It wasn't ripened. Hopefully, I thought maybe next year, you know, it'll come back again. In spring, it popped. It didn't bud out, it failed. So there you go, my $30 gone actually, you know, in trying to grow. But I learned my lesson is that you can't trust completely what the catalog advertised or the garden center advertised. Saying Chicago hardy fig is not really hardy. But at the same time, I also got a couple of different varieties because besides Chicago hardy, only Chicago hardy I planted outside. One other fig called Negroni fig. This Negroni fig was labeled for zone 6. I was sure that I can't plant them outside because the Chicago hardy failed me, but what this is not gonna do. So I planted in a big container and I wasn't sure how to overwinter them. So I dragged it in my office and placed it actually right to our next bright sunny window. I thought all the leaves were gonna shut up. But amazingly, it grew like a house plant with the gigantic leaves. And those are the leaves, actually. People are thrilled to see those things, actually, in our seed starting room, you know, how amazingly these fig looks like. And by, you know, in January, late January, it started to produce fruits. Even under low light conditions, in the middle of the winter time, our seed starting room was like 65 degree Fahrenheit. During the daytime, it started producing figs. But the fruits weren't ripened yet. So immediately, once in the month of May, when we had a suddenly like an 80 degree weather, I moved it outside for the entire week, it started ripe. The fruit is amazing. It tastes really amazing, and I loved it. So now we still have the fig right now outside. I'm hoping to bring them back again inside. What did I learn from this is that figs are really a tropical and subtropical one. You don't need to necessarily chill this fig plant, just like an apples or anything, you know, you need to have some certain cooling temperature. No, you can treat them purely like a house plant, and you can able to get the fruits actually, you can let them to continue to grow throughout the year in your own house. In the summertime, place them outside, you can get these figs ripe right away. So,
do they do well if you bring them in as a house plant? I keep my house cooler, so wintertime, maybe 68, 69, 70.
Our seed starting room with a big glass window, it doesn't have any heater inside into it, and in January, February, March, amazingly well. So 65 degrees is really perfect for them. It seems to be growing very well.
Okay.
So yes, certainly you can do it. So this year, I'm attempting to house in two more varieties. I'm going to give an attempt with a Chicago hardy fig, and then we also have a brown turkey fig. So I'm going to try to grow them inside back again in the office and see how they're going to perform. So.
You should talk to Chairman Noodle.
I know, I did.
He's a fig grower.
Yes. The next one is again a popularly advertised. This kind of advertised in the sense that this might be the second most popular fruits to blueberries. They call it a honeyberry hascap. It's native to Japan and Russia. And I read in literature that in Japan, it's called elixir. It's like a, you know, elixir of the fruit kind of thing. So I was thrilled about growing these honeyberries. And we planted a lot of these honeyberries, you know, in like about like a 6 different varieties of honeyberries in our raised bed situation. The crop is amazing. It's a very low maintenance. The very first year you plant them, you don't have to water, you don't have to fertilize, you don't have to do anything. Because it's in the honeysuckle family, it really grows very well, and it doesn't have any major pests and diseases. The cool thing about this honeyberries is that it is the first crop that produces the blossoms. Probably in first or second week in May, you will start to see the flowers coming up, even much before than your strawberries. And then probably by first and second week in June, you'll start to see the crop. Only in second and third year, it start to produce this crop. And the fruits are very tiny in size. and they'll turn into bluish purple in color. When you squeeze it, your fingers will stain, and when you taste it, you will spit it out. So it is not really a honey berry, it is a bitter berry. Say, I don't know how they advertise it. I thought maybe I have the palatability issue. My sense organ is really goofing out. So I asked, actually, we had a bunch of inmates coming up to do our work here. So 5 and 6 different inmates came in, did a taste testing, all those things. Gosh, they didn't yell at me, but but it was ranked pretty low in terms of edibility. So it is bitter in taste, but in terms of antioxidant level, it turns out to be 11,000 ORAC unit. So it's, but I don't know what is the hush about growing this honey berries. So boysenberry, you all heard about blackberries, right? Blackberries, raspberries. The problem with the blackberries is that it is not truly hardy for Wisconsin. And I'll get to that. That's a wild blackberry, it's not the domesticated one, sir. The blackberries, most of the one, are not truly hardy. The second thing, the blackberries, if you attempt to grow, it is like a, it grows like a jungle. Each of these vines spreads about like 6 feet tall, very thorny, and it is not an easy crop to be tamed in. But people love it because of the taste. Say, this is a boysenberry. It is nothing new. It was actually discovered by a farmer down in California in 1920s. And he hybridized it by mixing a lot of different brambles, blackberries, raspberries, all mixed together. And this hybridized steroid type of berry was he discovered, called boysenberry. Now, this boysenberry was labeled for zone 6, probably like in down in Illinois, Missouri area, it is supposed to be. So we haven't attempted to grow it in Wisconsin. So last 2-3 years, we've been trying to grow them in raceback. Amazingly, it did very well. It dies back in the winter, comes back again, and it start producing the crop in the second year cane. And like any other like a blackberry, they tend to wine out 5-6 feet. I'm still trying to figure out how's the best way to train them in a trellis system. We are using some bungee cord there, and we are trying to attempt to lift them. But still, it's a very vigorous crop. But the fruits are amazing. The fruits are very big in size, like a big, probably like a size of a little bit more than like a quarter size, And it tastes really amazingly very well, very rich. There are some few boysenberries which are ripe right now, so if you guys are able to find it, help yourself. We don't have the ORAC value for it. I think the USDA did not test it for it, but I can able to say it is much richer than blackberries, I would say. The good thing about this boysenberry, it is thornless. It is not like a blackberry which has a big, big spines. This is thornless, so you can easily able to actually train them and harvest them, I'm hoping for that. So.
Yeah, I've been trying to kill my blackberries off for 5 years because the thorns are awful.
Give a chance with the boysenberry. You will love it.
Gooseberry.
Okay, what is about the gooseberry? It's rich in vitamin C and everything is fine. But when you give a try with the taste this fruit, you will fall in love. I can bet you it is much tastier, to be honest with you, compared to the blueberries with all the maintenance issue. Gooseberries are very less maintenance, rich in taste, and the only disadvantage is its thorns. These are thorny gooseberries. But it grows vigorously very well. Even like in second year, it produces too much biomass, and every cane produces these gorgeous gooseberry fruits. These gooseberry varieties, which is called the, Hinamaki Yellow and Pixel, they are not tawdry in taste at all. So right now, our gooseberries are in this prime stage for harvesting. They are in a very sweet golden reddish in color right now. So, except watch out for the thorns. This Hinamaki Yellow is more of a dwarf one. It doesn't grow not more than 12 inches high, but the fruit tastes really well. And this comparative Pixel is less thorny. These two are extremely hardy for Wisconsin. say you'll have a lot of success in growing this, any of these two varieties. How many of you guys tasted currants, black currants, red currants? Did you like it for fresh consumption?
Yeah.
Okay. When I tasted black currants, it is like swallowing a bit of hell. Very tart, stringent. But people love to use black currants in making for beverages, mixing it for beverages, making jams and jellies out of it. But if you're one of those person, you really like more of a sweet in taste type of things. Black crandall, which is a type of a black currant. And the beauty about this black crandall is that it has a more of a sweet and tart taste to it. Say, in springtime, the flowers are gorgeous. It has more spicy, fragrant flowers. It attracts the bees right in the springtime. In fall color, they are more of a golden red in fall color. So it can be used for ornamental purpose as well. And it is thornless as well. Currants are generally thornless too. And the fruit tastes really amazing as well. So I came to know about it from our state specialist in River Falls. And then I came to know in Chicago Botanical Garden, they've been growing them 3 years ago. I tasted their fruits, it's amazing as well. So now, this is the second year, we can start to see some of the fruits turning in a blackish color. So it's an amazing fruit. If you don't like the black currants, then you can also try black crandall currant, which is really an alternate, which is sweet in taste, and kids will love it type of thing.
So what fruit has the highest level of antioxidants?
Like I said, lingonberry has a highest one, about 20,300 watt value to it. Now, there is one called black raspberry, and that's also the rank number next, which is about 19,220 value to it. We don't grow that much of black raspberry, even though black raspberries are native to Wisconsin. But people have a hard time in training them and doesn't understand how to grow them properly. But we have a variety called Jewel, and for the second year we had the fruit. The problem is trying to train them is the biggest challenge with that, and it's also very spiny. It has a lot of thorns to it too.
They don't train; just find a place out of the way.
So besides this, we also have goji berries too. And goji berries, have anyone tried goji berries?
Right, they're strong.
Yeah, I can't eat it actually, the raw one. But first time when I tasted it, it was from, I got it actually mixed up with some trail mix with some other nuts and stuff. They kind of sweetened it seems like. So I thought maybe they're sweet in taste. When I grow them, actually, two, three years ago, it started producing a fruit right away. When I tasted it, it is like a bitter like a hell. And no wonder why people tend to sweeten them up quite a bit. And I don't know, but there are a lot of reports that claims that in Chinese medicines, the goji berries have been quite a bit used and helps in preventing cognitive disorders and all kind of age-related issues, and it can help in prolong your life, it seems like. So there are a lot of anecdotal type of things about those goji berries. But we do have goji berries, but I'm not sure, about its edibility for fresh consumption. So based on that, we have some few potential candidates which can be grown successfully in the backyard. So my next step as an extension educator is that to develop some peer-reviewed extension fact sheets and publications and get these things published, and so that many of the educators can be aware about it. And I also planning on presenting some of these cultural techniques to grow some of these fruits, and with my peer colleagues from extension educators, present them at the conferences as well as other scientific conferences as well. Hopefully down the road, I'm planning on hosting some field days related to that as well, so I can able to invite some of the local fruit growers in our region, and also offering some presentation for any garden clubs and organization, and also to present at the radio talk shows, and hopefully get some YouTube videos out of that as well. At the same time, I'm planning actually to continue to assess the performance of these crops. It's been only 2-3 years right now. So it all it takes like one polar vortex, and then probably I can have a pretty good understanding which one really, really thrives. And at the same time, in a, I would like to attempt to grow some of the new varieties that's also further in the market, some new different types of elderberries and joestaberries, and see how they really taste. Joestaberry is not a new one, but it's on my wish list to attempt to grow them here as well.
So the moral of the story is if we eat Swedish pancakes and put lingonberries on it, we shouldn't feel too guilty. Is that
right?
What you're saying?
Back down to
your high antioxidant content.
Yeah, yeah.
You sold me.
Yeah.
I think the moral of that is eat your lingonberry on the pancake at Al Johnson's in
right.
Sister Bay, Wisconsin.
With the side of Swedish meatballs.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but the take-home message is that in a, some of these novelty berries, yes, you can grow them in your own backyard. And the thing about is also is that you don't have to worry about in a what are you going to spray for it, or you know what has been contaminated with it. All those things you don't have to worry about it. So you know what you actually how you've been growing them, and you know when to harvest those things. Just like any of the vegetable crops, we have all-season vegetable crops. We can also have this all-season small fruit crops, starting from some like strawberries, blueberries, raspberries, you know, blackberries. You know, throughout the season, we can be able to continuously harvest them, and we can include them directly in our diet without being enriched by high sugars and using juices and stuff like that. We can also have our own fresh consumption of those things. So I think this is something that we have to educate our, among our kids. So, you know, rather than actually indulge them directly in a high refined sugar, there are some lot of natural sugars these some small fruit crops can yield.
So the berries that you harvest, where are they going? Are you just eating them or what?
Yes.
Are you passing them around? Or
what we invited you to come and pick them.
Is that the open invite? So if you want berries, just come over here and pick them.
It is open to public 24/7. Anyone can walk in and harvest these things. So wow. Currently all the vegetables, the fruit crops, I'm distributing to my colleagues here in the building. So I can increase them to come outside and get those things, you know. So.
Pull a weed or two along the way.
Cool. Well, thank you, Vijay. I appreciate your work with the garden and your work into this presentation. Thank you. All right. Well, then let's transition to the educator and program updates and the director updates.
Sounds great. Well, we'll start at my right, Carolyn, and make our way down the
trail here. You have to forgive my casualness today, but I was at Wild
camp.
West Camp, our day camp with the Clover Buds today. But camp's kind of been my focus for June up until now. We had a day camp for 6th through 8th graders at Bristol Woods. It also rained that day during that, but that went well. It was nice to collaborate with Bristol Woods. Then we had our two-and-a-half-day, two-night camp out at Army Lake Camp. And BJ, I was going to tell you, now I know what this is, because they were all over the place at camp, even crawling on the kids at night. So so we did that, and then today, again, we had the K-5 through 2nd grade camp over at the Racine County Fairgrounds, and we'll have another camp for that age group at Bristol Woods in August.
Carolyn, you had adventure camp too, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was mostly Racine County kids. But yes, so that was mostly where the moths were crawling. Because the adventure camp, they stay in tents. And the base campers, 3rd through 5th graders, get to stay in cabins.
All right.
Thank you, Carolyn.
Just a couple of quick highlights. I was able to work with 18 people at the Kenosha Correctional Center to do some of the financial education prior to work training and placement as they transfer in. And I had a youth mental health first aid training with 15 people that attended. And then because 4-H camps are happening, I'm still helping out with the supporting youth mental health for 4-H volunteers. So co-facilitated three sessions of those since lots of camps and things are happening in the summer.
I started on Monday, so I've been onboarding. And I'm just reading through all the different stuff that's happened before I started and all the awesome work Amy's done to see where I'm starting off from and where we can take the position from there.
I think I saw you in the office yesterday working away.
I was probably on some Zoom meetings, yep.
DJ, do you want to share anything program-wise?
Yes, on July 17th, which is coming Monday, I'm hosting an info session on spongy moth. The infestation is bad in Twin Lakes area. So the photograph that you're seeing seems to be the epicenter, which is at 336th Avenue. And with about 2.5 mile radius from this epicenter, you know, we have this infestation. So the last few weeks, I've been doing the aerial assessment with using a drone, trying to capture what the spread of infestation in the county area, west side of the county area is. The counties in Walnut counties and those counties, the infestation is so bad. So they are kind of actually creeping in from that area and progressing to the west side. Now, it's too late to do anything, but if we happen to have this type of weather conditions like dry springtime, we're gonna have a big, nasty infestation again next year too. And it's gonna encroach the west side of the county. And that's gonna cause a lot of devastation to our oak trees. So please join us for this info session. The property owner, it's gonna be hosted on the property owner site. He was so generous enough to, you know, open his residential area to host this training program so people can see the magnitude of the infestation that has been happening out in his wooded areas right in that area. So
question for you then. If they're landing on the kids in the area and things like that, we're bringing vehicles in and vehicles out, are we potentially inducing spread? Because your
yes.
presentation said they will get into...
That is very minuscule. That's an insignificant amount of bay, but the real problem of spread is going to be caused by the adult moth. So right now, the caterpillars are pupating. In beginning in August, the male and the female moth, say they are the one. The male moth can travel quite a bit compared to the female moth. Female moth is not like a dummy thing, you know. Say, she doesn't actually that much, you know. I'm sorry, I didn't mean it right.
Yeah.
Say, and this causes a spread of it. Each female lays about 500 to 600 eggs.
Oh my God. Wow. Yikes.
And they all can germinate, though, you know. And so you can think about it. When you have a huge infested area from here, and you're going to start to see the spread of all these insects coming up, each lays about 600 eggs. Can you imagine actually? And when you have about like 50,000 insects in this particular small area and all this, you know, things going to hatch out, it's going to be unbelievable.
What insecticide are they susceptible to?
The problem is it is not the insecticide, it is the delivery of this insect. These caterpillars are smart enough, actually, they crawl to the upside down on the top of the tree. And do we have a way to spray on the top of the tree of a 40, 50, 60 feet tall tree? No. And what we can do is that we can make an attempt to trap them by tying a bottle up. So I'm going to talk more about it in the 17th one. I don't want to steal. But in the past, a decade ago, the DNR contracted the aerial application by using a type of a product, which is a virus actually called nucleopolyhedral virus, NPV. It is very specific to gypsy moth. But the population crashed down in the last about like a half a decade ago, so the DNR quit the program. Now the bugs are back again right now, and in a huge numbers, the last 3 years it's been built up. And say that's the only way we can able to try to resolve this, because it's an epidemic issue. It is not like one homeowner's issue to just by spraying it in. Yeah,
but it's an aerial foliar.
Yeah.
Delivered by plane or drone.
Say either the municipality or the county, or you guys all have to come together, contract with a third party one to do this management thing. And I think aerial application is a makes a sensible sense. And how it's going to work out between the relationship between the county or the municipality, who's going to hire, and all this management strategy. A single homeowner can't do by himself trying to save his property.
Yeah, but looking at the devastation, if we have a larger scale, it's still compact. Compact, you can fight. if we have a larger scale infestation, the agribusiness in Kenosha County, Western County is where it's at, is in jeopardy. So we would need to understand what that investment like might look like on a unilateral attempt to try to push it back if the DNR doesn't step back up.
Yes. And so far, I didn't get a positive response from DNR. But
can you acquire cost information for us?
I can ask them, actually. Definitely, I can check with them. I can email them. But I know for sure that they contracted with a third party. I spoke to the Parks Department director, Matt Collins, about it as well, too, because the parks are in high danger for it.
Yeah, Veterans is all oak, so.
I did an area assessment, Veterans and Save. So, like I said to you, from 336 Avenue, about 2.5 mile radius, that it seems to be the infestation. So either we need to, you know, find a way to contain it in that area, or it's going to keep on progressing and cross the possible.
What are they? They just devour the leaves and the bark of the tree, or what are they?
They are the chewing machines. Oh. So at night time, that's where the chewing monster comes in. In a day, they can able to strip up the entire tree within a single night.
Jeez.
And if this continues, many of the oak trees will start to decline because they won't have enough energy stored in the body to to thrive the winter. So if it happens 2 years or 3 years in a row, you're going to have a huge decline in oak trees. Now, it not only attacks oaks, but also attacks maples. You will see actually in the property, you know, they have black walnut, oaks, birch, everything is gone. Maples, box elder trees, even that too. So,
We
are getting a lot of pressure. We've been getting a lot of inquiries, and I don't know what to do. I mean, you know, it's an epidemic issue. It's not just like managing a tomatoes or something like that. It's a large scale one. It's too late to do anything. We have to worry about for next year.
Okay. Multifaceted. First is identification of where, and if you can isolate that. How do we treat for it or fight it? What's the cost of it? What's the delivery vehicle? Then we can start on a strategy unilaterally, if nothing else. But we need to understand what that scope looks like.
Definitely, Supervisor Basha, I think that's what, you know, the local village administrators, the county officials, they have to form a task force. I can help you guys because my role is an educator. To go all the management strategies and stuff like that, probably we need to get involved with the DNR. And the DNR hands are also very tied up because they're highly understaffed. So the responsibility comes to the county and the local municipalities and the village. You know, I can provide you guys a little bit of a guidance, but I can't actually step in to be like a management contractors or anything like that.
Good. Thank you for that update. We'll look forward to your presentation on the 17th. Pam, any other educator updates that you have to share?
Only one, FoodWise. My chief has shared with me that the FoodWise team provided direct nutrition education at 54 program sites in Kenosha and has provided indirect education to an estimated 2,800 participants. This year has been about partnership engagement and learning about our community so the team can serve our participants and partners better. With input from our Kenosha partners and community members, FoodWise has decided to take a deeper dive into understanding what our community needs to thrive around health and nutrition. So that will be their focus. They will share future updates with you and information about the results of their Kenosha community conversations. And the goal is that these community conversations will provide some insight and help to build a stronger foundation for upcoming nutrition and policy systems and environmental strategies and approaches. So I know she'll be at future meetings and can share that with you. I'll keep mine real short. FoodWise, we've interviewed already for a nutrition educator position and are moving forward with reference checks. So that hopefully that position will be filled. We have teacher coordinator interviews on Friday, so hopefully those will be successful, and I can share good news next month about that. Our direct market vegetable educator, we're having second interviews on July 18th. August, well, let me see if I have anything else. Love the bus tour, was so glad that I was able to attend, and thank you for those of you who were able to attend, much appreciated. I'll be starting performance management and development program, which we call PMDP, midpoint conversations at the end of this month and throughout August. So, and that's just my way of checking in with the educators and then providing feedback. And then we have final evaluations at the end of the year, but we're in that process as well. And then my question to you is, I've been told that there will not be a planning and development meeting portion next month. So wondering if you want to have an extension education committee meeting, or if we want to take a hiatus for a month and reconvene in September. And I would just work with our guest speaker to reschedule. I wanted your input versus me just saying, nah, they're not having their meeting, we won't have it, or yes, I will make them come in at 6 o'clock.
So. I would say, Chairman Carroll, who's not here tonight, would probably have, be able to weigh in heavily on that decision.
Okay.
I know historically, occasionally when there are no land use items, historically this committee doesn't meet.
Okay.
But I guess we'll wait.
True.
Yeah.
All right.
I guess that would be ultimately up to Chairman Carroll.
Carroll's
decides.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Then I will email him tomorrow and we'll get back to you.
But you said you have a special speaker lined up already.
Well,
for that
he's
night.
On the schedule, but I've already reached out to him, so we'll work together. We're flexible that way. Yeah.
Somebody from out of town.
Yeah, and he is. So that way, I mean, he would just know that you don't have to come until.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So, well, we'll look forward.
Yeah, because we'd have plenty of notice. I'd rather let him know in the next week versus a week ahead of time saying no, don't.
I know we only have 30 seconds, but Carolyn, you didn't touch the fairs 4-H. You got a lot of stuff happening right now.
Yes, a lot of things are happening. Yeah, but I'm doing a lot of liaison work between the kids and worried parents and the fair. But yeah, and we're planning, they always do a clover booth that'll highlight and promote the 4-H through that. The kids and adults and leaders always run the pop and pizza stand out at the fair, so we're getting the minis ready for that. So yeah, it's a busy time.
Good. Well, I want to thank each of you for taking time out of your evening to be at our meeting here tonight. Thank you for your continued work all throughout the month. And Savannah, we are excited to have you jumping into this new role. And please let us know if we can be of help or support to you in any way during this time of transition. So that goes for all of our educators, of course. All right, thank you.
All right. Thank you all. Thank
we'll
you so much.
We'll convene next door in a few minutes.
All right. Can you split?